From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. This week, once again, Congress enters a great unknown, and members of Congress are engaging our nation's economic recovery and the good faith and credit of our government by failing to enact legislation to cover our national debt and to pass a fiscal year 2022 budget. Also this week, the Postal Regulatory Commission issued its second advisory opinion relating to the Postmaster General's plan to slow down mail delivery for a significant portion of first-class mail volume. The first postal regulatory opinion, which was issued earlier this summer, was highly critical of the Postal Service's scheme to alter customer expectations and was issued in the midst of the summer. However, the Postal Regulatory Commission urged the Postal Service to defer implementation. Notwithstanding the Postal Regulatory Commission's advisory opinion and overwhelming mailer and public criticism, the institutional mail delay started on October 1st. The second Postal Regulatory Commission advisory opinion was issued just this week, and it applies the same type of directed delay to first-class parcels, a class of mail that includes prescription medications. The Postal Regulatory Commission once again concluded that the Postmaster General's plans were not ready for prime time. In part, the Postal Regulatory Commission concluded that the Postal Service did not validate savings stemming from the plan, failed to establish that it is operationally equipped to run a surface transport postal mode, which it will be forced to rely on. It failed to set realistic interim service performance targets, failed to develop a rigorous analytical method to monitor implementation of the new standards, neglected to create a mechanism by which the agency could evaluate customer satisfaction as the implementation takes place, and failed to establish a means of engaging stakeholders during the plan's implementation. Notwithstanding the Postal Regulatory Commission's well-founded concerns, we expect the postal executive leadership will proceed with its plans. On that positive note, I'd like to welcome to this week's Naps Chat our honored guest, former Naps President Louis Atkins. Louis served as president of Naps from 2010 through 2016 and continues to be an active force within the National Association of Postal Supervisors. Moreover, he also serves on the board of directors for the Signature Federal Credit Union, a financial institution which provides service to a significant number of Naps members. Now, Louis, I want to ask you this question. You know, when you were president or as a member of the executive board, were you ever confronted with a postal proposal to slow down the mail?
No, not whatsoever, Bob. It's something that none of the leadership at the Postal Service even thought about. That was not anything at any meetings or during the entire 28 years that I served on the board that subject ever came up.
What do you think the reaction would be if, you know, the Postmaster Generals that you actually, when you served as a resident officer, that would have started with Jack Potter, continued with Pat Donahoe, and concluded with Megan Brennan? What do you think your reaction would be if they made a proposal to slow down the mail for some reason because they felt more comfortable using ground transport rather than other modes of transporting the mail?
No, really, it's inconceivable that idea would have even come up, because late on in the course, the logical progression is that if we slow down the mail, people are going to use us less. They depend upon a reliable mail service. And the slower it gets, the less that they're going to use a postal service. And it starts a vicious cycle. People start using the mail less, the prices increases. So therefore, that would have been very disappointing and really unlogical or illogical at that time. when I heard that in the current news, I'm still very disappointed because the cycle will start again, because the actual slowing down the mail is going to cause the few mailers we have less to use us even more so. My philosophy and the philosophy at the stage when I was a member of the executive board was strictly, if we increase and improve on our service, we're going to gain more public trust and therefore more mail volume. And that was a philosophy that I still believe in. Slowing down the mail is going to drive us in the wrong direction.
That's something very interesting about that, you know, the trust in the mail system, the trust in the postal service is so important that anything that undermines trust will not turn out well for the United States Postal Service.
It will not. We're one of the best loved government agency that exists in today's environment.
I want to get to your history with NAPS and to talk a little bit about your relationship with the organization and how you got your start. Why did you join NAPS?
Well, to be very frank about it, Bob, after I was announced as a supervisor, within the first week, a member of Branch 209 approached me, happened to turn out to be the Secretary of Treasury, with 1187, said, hey, this is a management organization. You need to belong to it. And me, overwhelmed by the idea of being in management, hey, this is terrific. I really need to become a member. I don't want to be a non-member. And in that conversation, he said, look, Baton Rouge is 100%, which increased my need to become a member because I did not want to be an exception. That's how it all started.
It's a big step from being a member of NAPS to being an elected officer of NAPS. Why did you want to be an elected officer, a resident officer, and ultimately NAPS president?
Well, during the course of my career, I was very involved in just the everyday activity. But as we went to start having national conventions, even our local conventions and bi-state conventions, I had opportunity to see our national leaders there. And I mean, they always made me feel comfortable and all, and they were very influential on my behavior. So after greeting them and speaking to them on many occasions, hey, I wanted to be that influential person. I wanted to move on up. I wanted to share the good news of NAPS. I wanted to become that person influence people in a positive manner.
As you were working your way up the leadership pole at NAPS, did you have a mentor?
Yes, very much indeed. It all started with Don Medved and Reuben Handelman. Those were outstanding gentlemen and leaders. They were really just good people. And they influenced me a great deal and provided me an opportunity to speak with them at any occasion that I became a local officer or state officer. And they welcomed me into their fold. And they provided guidance in my moving up the ladder. They really listened to all the members, and they really made me feel comfortable. I not only wanted to just be a dues-paying member, not only a local officer, but become that influential person and share the good of our organization.
Now, in addition to having mentors, you had the opportunity to have a relationship with the three past Postmaster Generals who I mentioned up top, Jack Potter, Pat Donahoe, and Megan Brennan. Could you talk about the different relationships you had had with them?
Yeah. Bob, I was first resident officers with under Bill Henderson.
Oh, okay.
That was only about 6 months. But our relationship with Bill was mostly through, we have an attorney that was working at that time for us. Him and Bill were very good friends. So when I attended some of the events, I got an opportunity to interact with Bill. But not so much as a NAPS related, but just getting to know him, and he was getting to know me. That attorney was Tim May. He He was excellent at making sure that I became knowledgeable and also known at Postal Headquarters.
And the relationship that you might have with Jack and Jack Potter, yeah, Pat Donahue, and Megan?
Yeah. Jack was a very cordial guy. He really made me feel comfortable. He really, I guess, had a partnership. He would call and I would call him on various occasions, and it was true partnership. We brought anything up to Jack. It was really, we didn't always agree or I got the answer I wanted to, but under Jack, we felt that he listened to us. And that was important at that stage in my career, that headquarters was listening, and they considered us. They wouldn't get everything we actually needed or wanted, but the idea of being a true partner was a major factor in Jack's administration. Jack did wonders for NAPS. He was really concerned about it. Now, under Pat, my expectation of Pat was very interactive with Pat, I should say. Pat was a very good person, very good leader. But Pat lost some of his tractions when he started getting in a lot of legislative matters. Pat would go up to Congress and they would beat him over the head with many issues. The one with that always thing was that if we are given these supervisors NPAs at a rate from anywhere from 6 to 10%, and we're losing money every year, how can that be? If they're that good, why are we losing money? And Pat didn't want to take that head on with him. He took the beating. But the basic answer was postage was not a factor in what the Congress people were looking at. Postage prices should have been increased for our services. And Pat did not want to take that head on and all about increasing postage or trying to get that as much as some of our members wanted, because then you drive mailers away. But the main thing that was left out of the gumbo was that we delivered to every household every day except Sunday. And that cost was never figured in to the prices of stamps, parcel posts, library rates, or nothing. But we would deliver mail every day to every household there is in the United States. That universal service was never considered. That's why the prices of our stamps, first class, was never enough. And Pat did not want to take that head on. But he was very good, and he kept us informed, but not really a person that took our issues under really consideration. I think a lot of things that we brought up to him was always predetermined that we got the answer no. You know, and Megan was a person of the same type. Now, I had great expectations for Megan when she was appointed, because she, like Pat, was coming up to the ranks, but I was betting on that she would bring more of a human aspect to the leadership of the Postal Service. But again, that faded away because of the issues with Congress. She did not want to continuously getting beat upon because of price increases or raises that the supervisors were getting. But at the same time, she was notified on many occasions that clerks, mail handlers, all were getting raises every year, no matter what the service was, no matter what the cost. They were getting increases, 2%. They were also getting COLA. But supervisors was getting zipped. And that was very difficult to live with in the ranks of an EAS and also as a resident officer, because it was nothing that we could go to and hang our hats on to make a better life for our supervisors. Mm-hmm. And everything else. Now, that was Megan, but they were both good leaders, but they didn't I don't know. I wouldn't say like of a backbone. I guess that's the wrong thing to say, but didn't attack them head on. The best defense is a great offense. Make them stay off the field. But that didn't happen.
As you adapted to each one of these Postmaster Generals, because you had to deal with them not only on the legislative front and operational front, but also when you went down to consult over, for example, during pay talks. So you had to adapt to those different types of leadership styles. Did you adapt or did you stay constant?
No, I adapted. But the thing that was in the forefront in my vision for the future was that consultations were a matter of just being a consultations. They really lost the power because everything that we were saying that was predetermined and there was really no consultation. Under Henderson and under Jack and prior Postmaster Generals that we had, I would go down from 1990, I would go down every 3-4 months as a member of the board to attend consultations. Under the prior to Jack, Vice President of Labor Relationship with the 10-hour consultations. So that made us feel like, hey, they're really listening to the issues. And later on, that disappeared where they shoved us down to somebody else. Not saying the rest of the crew are not helpful and thoughtful, but they did not hear us directly and could take issues with going out and straight some of our issues out. We were very good under Potters and prior to Potters under Henderson when I attended them as a resident officer. But that facet got weaker and weaker.
Louis, you know, presidents of any organization or NAPS specifically, that you need to take an idea of what the big picture is. You served in different capacities within NAPS. You were secretary treasurer. You were the executive vice president. And you ultimately became the president. How did the different offices that you held compel you or sort of help you see the big picture in the decisions that you made on behalf of the organization?
Definitely. As serving as secretary treasurer, it gave me the financial background when I was serving as president. Being executive vice president, the legislative matter was in the forefront. So those two previous offices provided me with experience and knowledge. So when I became president, I had a full grasp of what was going on in the organization, particularly in looking toward the future and making some of the big decisions. I felt comfortable in our members of guiding and listening to me. And I also, my key component was I had a Bob, to be very honest, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but it appeared to be if I surrounded myself with very smart people that I could succeed. And that's what actually happened. The staff I had, the board I have, and particular the contractors I have, you know, those are the people that somewhat molded me. And I took many of their advice. And we became successful. NAPS was all had been successful in the days before me, and I wanted to continue that success. But it wasn't just due to me. It was the people that guided me and helped me. And that was the contractors, the board, and the staff. I consult with the resident officers on every decision that was made. One of my successes were that I thought about was holding a meeting every morning with the resident officers at 7:30. This was one of the things that I instituted when I became president. And that was to keep everybody informed what was going on, but more so for them to tell me their ideas and what they thought. Then I was responsible for the decision.
Prior to being elected president, and you mentioned this, you were the executive vice president, and that portfolio included legislative and political activities. Did you have a particular member of Congress or senator with whom you established a special relationship?
Bob, her name was Diane Watson. She was a representative out of the state of California. She really represents part of the city of Los Angeles. Her and my oldest sister were the best of friends coming up. And I knew Diane way before she got involved into politics and was a member of the member of the House of California. I forgot they had a special name for it. But I developed, so when she was elected member of the House of the United States Congress, I was sort of gravitated to her. And I went up there and welcomed and spoke to her. And I sort of got to know her real well, where I could go and say, hey, Diane, what's going on here? What do you see? And also, this is a NAPS issue, and all. Can you help me? Or what do I need to do, not only get you to vote for it, but other constituents to vote for it? And she was more than helpful in that way. And we became very close until she decided not to run for re-election. Also, a member that I really appreciate, Jerry Conley. He was a superb advocate on NAPS issues and brought forth a lot things to Congress and developed bills to help us make life better for EAS. And he was more than helpful. I could call, and his aides would give me information on anything that I needed to know about. So those are two probably the most instrumental congresspersons that I dealt with.
When we talk about legislation, a lot of success relies on membership engagement and motivation. You were obviously motivated by your predecessors. You mentioned former President Don Ledbetter and former President Ruby Handelman. These days, through your experience, how do you inspire, motivate, and engage NAPS members?
Well, the key that I hope I had the influence on my NAPS members, but really one of the things as I wanted to accomplish as president was more the human aspect of being a leader. That, by that I mean I would get at events. I would get down and socialize with the members that was there. I always appeared and mingled among the members to find out their advice. I wanted to make it more of me being a NAPS member than I'm being the NAPS president. And that's how I think members become more involved. If they see you're active, they're following your footsteps, by they can be wanting to do the same thing as you did. And that was my sole guidelines. I just wanted to become close to the members because actually, hey, they're my boss. And that's the way I did the whole staff and membership, to encourage them to want to do a better job, because you can't make them become involved, but you can want to make them become involved. It's up to them.
One of the observations I had and I was not on NAP staff at that point in time, was you had a very special relationship with the president at that time of the National Association of Postmasters, and that was Dale Goff. Can you talk a little bit about that relationship and how you all worked together with him in the interest for EAS employees?
Yeah. Again, it was very helpful for me to know Dale prior to him becoming president, because we both good old Louisiana boys. And we attended meetings at the Louisiana District all the time. But Gail has a personality that he's very trustworthy. He tell you like it is, and he does it in a very mindful way of what you may believe in. And Dale and I both saw that, hey, we have more in common than differences. So we accomplish more by working together. And we developed I call it a very special relationship, where I talked to him quite frequently, several times during the week. He would call me up. And we began visiting each other's convention. When I wasn't even secretary, but prior to that, when I was executive vice president, Dale invited me to the meetings, national conventions of NAPES at that time. So it became special, and he always helped me out. If I had a little problem with some of the leaders of NAPS down on the local level, I would consult with Dale, and he was more than helpful. He's the type of guy that, hey, you might not want to hear what I got to say, but this is what it is. You know, he's a just special friend and a special person. And he did a lot at our meetings up at the headquarters. Dale was very aggressive, and I wanted the best for his members. He was one of the most, he was always member-centered. That was it, what's best for my members. And I can relate to that because my job was to make life better for our supervisors. So we agreed on a lot, and things we disagreed, well, we didn't dwell on. We just stood positive and moved forward for the sake of all our membership.
Final question, Louis. As president, what was your biggest challenge and what was your biggest success?
Bob, it goes back to those pay negotiations and all. They became very frustrating. Even though the mediator ruled against us, I think my greatest success was for the first time NAPS asked for mediations with the pay package. And even though it was very frustrating that the mediators ruled against us, but the fact is we brought a lot of information and data to the forefront of how the pay package was not even comparable to what the general pay section out there were. It also showed that our working conditions was not even as good as how we were being treated with lack of respect and dignity. And that became the part of it. So I really think that was one of my greatest success was to bring all this to the forefront. I also had the opportunity that the lawyers that are involved in our lawsuit today that developed from the second request for mediation, I had the opportunity to hire. And I think they did a terrific job and all. And I was very pleased with their presentation at mediation. So by the way, all the mediators agreed with us, but now we're in a lawsuit because the Postal Service had the right to say, okay, this is all good, but we're still not going to give you your pay. And that's frustrating. So you could say that was one of the things that it all centered around the pay package, my biggest success and what I wanted to accomplish. I'm not going to say failure because I don't think there was any.
Louis, I want to thank you for joining us today on NAPS Chat. This was Louis Atkins, former president of NAPS. Thanks for joining me on this episode, Louis.
Hey, thank you, Bob, for inviting me. And it's always good to be with you and hear your voice and be with my NAPS family.
And regards to Benita, the boss of the household.
That's so true. Thank you, Bob.
I want to thank NAPS Chat listeners for logging on this week. If you enjoy NAPS Chat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share NAPS Chat with your friends and colleagues.
I'm going to sit right down and write myself a letter and make